Welcome to Owning Pleasure as a Black Woman, where we celebrate the joy in just being you. I'm Natasha, your certified sex and intimacy coach and clinical sexologist. Just call me your guide to unlocking pleasure. With years of experience in helping individuals embrace pleasure beyond sex, I'm here to empower you to rediscover the beauty of pleasure in every aspect of life. So settle in, relax, and get ready to savor the wisdom and insights we're about to drop. This is your space to be present, learn, and enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Owning Pleasure as a Black Woman. I am Natasha, your wonderful host, and I am so thrilled to have you back, beautiful. Welcome. So this episode is part two of the Other Black Girl Hulu series. Now, these next two episodes, I enlisted a little bit of help to talk it out and get a review and just to pick other people's brains about what was going on for them when they were watching this series. So in part two, I am joined by Veronique L. Porter and Tanisha Allen. So Veronique L. Porter is a Black with a capital B cisgender woman from Chicago. She founded Apersan Workshop to turn race and gender theory into actionable steps, giving folks the tools to enact anti-racist and gender inclusive values within their daily lives and communities. She loves horror, reality shows, and pop culture. Her wanderlust is real, and the loud laugh is definitely hers. And then we have Tanisha Ashayomi Allen, who is a transformational coach and mentor focused on helping you turn your fears into action and achieve your next level of success as a keynote speaker, operations excellence, SME, EFT tapping expert. Definitely going to have her come back on to talk about that. And spiritual strategist, she brings a unique blend of expertise. She'll guide you towards joy awareness as an operation strategy and use energetic alignment to create seismic shifts in your business and life. Now, we laugh and giggle and kiki during this episode. I hope that maybe if you're not sure how you feel about the show, our conversation today opens your eyes and also helps you remember that though this is a horror comedy show, it is real horror. These are things that we as Black women deal with, especially in the corporate world on a day-to-day basis. And we definitely share our experiences about that in this episode. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Okay, so thank you, ladies, so much for joining me to have this wonderful, wonderful conversation about the Other Black Girl. So first, I want to know, how did you feel after it was over? In no particular order, y'all. We just gonna chat this out.
Well, I'm happy to go. I literally binged it over a weekend.
I did too.
You know, they're short episodes, so that's easy enough to do. But yeah, I actually really enjoyed it. And I will say that, like, I'm a spooky girl. This is my season. I love anything that's like a little off, down to downright horror. Mm-hmm. And I'm really loving the resurgence of like Black horror and prominence and what we're seeing from Black horror these days. I cannot stand when the horror is racism. So what I love the most about this show is that the experience was real and it was grounded in Black culture, mm-hmm. but the gag wasn't racism, right? The gag was a little bit more twisted than that, a little bit more nuanced than that. And that's what I'm really loving from Black horror. So I really enjoyed it.
Yes, I do. I do like a good Black horror. What about you, Tanisha? What did you think after?
I like any show that features Black women as like the lead, one. Hey. And then two, I like anything that plays on our emotions for real things that we really go through, two. And I think similar to what V said, it's very much like play on my feelings without making me the joke. You know what I mean? Like, let me express myself. Let me talk about the things that actually scare me without, like, it hurting me, per se. You know what I mean? And I think the thing that made that show masterful is that it highlighted a really real experience where, and then, you know, I remember when the trailer came out, I was like, damn, I do get worried when there's not a Black girl that joins the team, because you never know what side they're going to take. You never know if it's going to change you. You never know. And so, like, all of it was real. So I like things that play with my emotions, my real experiences. And I feel like that show did that really well.
Yeah, and the trailer didn't give much. I was like, what is this? Like, what? Okay, now I have to watch it, because what is this? And then I was so confused for, like, the first 5 episodes. Like, I was trying to figure out, well, maybe it's this, well, maybe it's that, because they just really weren't giving anything. So how did the two of you feel during those first 5 episodes? You can go first, B. We just go keep the same order.
Okay, yeah, fine. Honestly, I felt the same way. Like, I'm not the type of viewer that is trying to figure out what's going on. I'm very much so like, tell me what's up. I'm here for the ride. But, you know, sometimes with shows, you can just easily see where it's going to play out. And it's all about how they do it, right? And for this show, I'm like, I don't know. What's this going to What's happening? I don't know. And so I really enjoyed that part, too, where it was very much so like, how is this going to shape up? What's the twist? What's the gag? It, you know, what actually is the thing that's off, right? That was the thing I was trying to figure out the whole time. I know something's off, and I know that's the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
What's beyond just like, you know, working in a white workplace, because we all know that's usually off. But in this case, like, what's the off part? What's gonna happen? So those first 5 episodes, they did a good job of like setting up the characters, setting up Wagner, you know, setting up the whole thing, only like in the what, last 3 maybe episodes?
Yes.
Get on his head and twist it up, and you like.
Yes, those last 3 was just packed with everything, and then it ended, and I was like, okay, you gotta, you, please, Hulu, do not just leave us here and cut us off and don't add anything to it, because there's still so much that can go on.
Oh, yeah.
So much to play off of it. Tanisha, how did you feel about the first 5 episodes?
I'm the person that gets confused and anxious. So what's my experience? I don't like waiting for the end. I'm the person that like I will look it up. Like, if it's not making sense to me, if it's not like coming together quickly, because of my anxiety or my anxiety setup, I will go look it up. I'll go Google and see what happens at the end, just to ease my nerves so I can get through it. I'm that kind of reader. I'm that kind of watcher. If it's too much, and I think, what was I gonna say? The suspense was good, but what I think is that, like, when it comes to like black thrillers and black horrors, the people that genre that write these type of stories, they do that really well. They always want to like give you a bunch of like confusion and a bunch of things that seem really random at the end, at, like the beginning, and then it comes together at the end, or you go back and like research something and you're like, oh my god, this was like based off of this moment. Wow, it's masterful. And you're like, oh my god, I appreciate it. But no, in the middle of watching it, I don't like when stories don't come together. I don't like when it's random. I don't like when no one tells me or gives me any clue. I don't like carrots dangling. It gives me anxiety. I would rather not.
Yeah, I can't do anything with that. Like, because if even, I think I could read a book and then see, okay, how do they put it into movie form? Because they usually change it up. But if I already know what's going to happen, I'm like, why am I watching this? What is it?
No, it brings me in more. I need to know that the people that I like make it. I need to know that I hate really do die. Because like, if not, then it's like, it's not worth my time. Because if you're just gonna set me up for failure, and the people who I want to win don't win, or it win in a way that doesn't make sense, I'm still going to watch it. But like, yeah, so for me, the experience of like watching these episodes unfold was really like, ooh. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm getting the feeling that I talk about it.
And that's the spookiness, right? Like, that's the whole point.
Yeah, but then there's also like the comedy parts. Like, her friend Malika is absolutely hilarious.
Main character energy.
She really was. And looking at Malika, it made me think about how you always have that one friend that can see what's actually going on, but you you so badly want to, being in that situation that Nella was in, you so badly want to have someone on your side. Like, you want to have that person that you can, like, girl, let me tell you, or side eye, you know, we just be looking at each other. And I think that first, watching her go through that first roll under the bus and still just holding on this hope that you still my girl.
Yeah.
Like, that whole triangle of friendship is real. Like, it's really real, because they like, girl, she's playing you all the way, playing you. And she just refused to see it because she wanted somebody
so bad
to be on her side. And it just makes you think about how being in those environments can really knock your confidence and knock your value, so that you can't see the obvious. Hazel had obvious red flags.
Look, when she first threw her under the bus.
Oh, man, like just threw her.
You showed me who you are, right? Literally. When people, like, there's that quote that people always misquote from Maya Angelou, and I'm gonna misquote it too. But when people show you who they are, you better listen. Right? At the end of the day, she showed you exactly who she was. She said one thing, and then 2 seconds later did another thing. I got all the information I need to know. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We'll be cordial.
How many times has that happened to us, though? Mm-hmm. Like, I remember when I was still in corporate, like, I actually remember a very similar situation. Like, I was the one Black girl in management, and then they hired another one, right? And I was like, oh, this is going to be lit. It's going to be great. And, like, the first time that we met, it was like, oh, yeah, it's Black girl vibe. Okay, cool. And then we go out into the workplace, and I remember, I can't remember what the issue was, but it was a project that I was running, and I think I made something late. And the girl, like, completely switched it up. It was, like, performance in front of, like, men. And it was the whole thing. And I was like, oh, this is what we're doing. Mm. You know? Like, so many of us experience that in our careers, that, and I think that's what makes it spooky, right? That's what makes it something that we all want to see, because it's, like, that shit is terrifying. To, like, go out there, do your hard work, think that you're bonding with someone, and, like, you're really making a connection with them, and then you find out when everyone's watching, hey girl, you're on your own. You know what I mean? And not only you're on your own, but you're on your own in a big way. Don't got your back.
Yeah. I didn't have that experience in corporate, thank gosh. And in my episode where I kind of talked about my review, I actually had a band of Black girls. I had some Black supervisors that were constantly looking out for me, giving me the tea. Like, I remember we had to have it was some situations that went on between two people and things got heightened. And my supervisor pulled us into a Black girl meeting and was like, look, y'all need to get it together. This is what they are saying. This is what they are looking like. She really did. Like, and I was like, I didn't do anything. Why am I in this meeting? But just being a Black woman in the space, I'm just, because I work with them and I'm friends with one of them, I'm already guilty by association for whatever is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I really, like, that sticks out to me, because as uncomfortable as it was to have a meeting like that, like, I felt taken care of. And when everybody left, I was just there. Oh God, I have no buffer. But they set me up well, right? Like, they set me up to succeed. They set me up to move up the ladder. They paved the way for me so that when they left, I was good to go. But watching that situation, I don't know what I would do. I think I would definitely want to quit, or I know I have it in me, but my brain is telling me, no, we would have to quit, because we don't have the patience. We don't have the vernacular, because I'm blunt. I'm quick to tell somebody, look, leave me alone. You know, I'm the one, why are you not smiling, Tasha? Like, what's going on? Like, because I have no reason to smile, you know, and now I've offended somebody. So I appreciate it so very much that I had that band of sisterhood to look out for me in this very white establishment.
That is actually really beautiful. And I've never heard that before. And really? like I'm taken aback with, like, joy. Let me pull you into this meeting. Let's get it together. Let's, you know, let's be on the same page, because they on the same page against us. Let's be on the same
page. Yeah.
So much. And I've never had an experience where I had a collective amount of Black folks, no less Black women, in order to do that. I've never worked in a workplace where that was the case. So that just sounds so beautiful. I did have a Black supervisor come in a toxic workplace. And I was like, so excited. I'm like, this is the big boss of, you know, this particular department. And she's Black and she's experienced and all this stuff. And she was like, Black. I'm like, ooh. Mm-hmm. Did she look out? No.
No.
The exploit? Yes. And I was like, really, like, it went from excitement to disappointment so quickly, because she was able to come in and see all the dynamics at play. And she had so many experiences of her own that she was able to articulate. But mm-hmm. now she was in a position of power. Now that she was in a position of leadership, she didn't use that for my benefit. She just used it for her own.
She was a Diane.
She was worse than a Diane, I feel like. Because at least Diane has this warped sense of, like, I want you on my team, right? Like, mm-hmm. yes, it's my way, but I want us to succeed and I want us to do better. It just has to be my way, right? And it looks a certain way and it feels a certain way, and that's how we get it. This woman wasn't doing it. This woman was like, I'm climbing my way to the top. You do the same. And that has nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. So she was very much so able, and it wasn't mean, it wasn't malicious or anything. And she was very much so able to articulate, like, these are the ways in which I've experienced this. These are the issues that I've had, but also I'm still going to exploit you. I'm still going to, the same way that a white supervisor would act. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to tell you my experiences along the way and also mm-hmm. still exploit you specifically because you cool. And I'm like, hey, this upstairs, right? Like, you don't look out for me. She wasn't looking out for me.
Oh my gosh, heart wrenching. Tanisha, what do you think about Diane?
Diane is more who I come across too. Like, hey girl, hi. Yeah, the way you're like, I have like, come on, like, I have dreads, I have piercings, my hair is two different colors. Before the, was I ever at work before dreads? No. So like, I always kind of, and I'm from Brooklyn, and so, and I'm West Indian. Right. And so when you see me, it's very much like I don't code switch well. I don't, I mean, I do, right? But like, it's still like, girl, you're really code switching? Not really. Right. And I remember early on in my career, especially corporate, I was very like, I'm from Brooklyn, Black. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't really like a thing that people really liked. And so I come across a lot of Diane, a lot of, hey, sister girl. Hey, sister girl, queen. You know, because they always say, sister girl, especially when they're older. Yeah. And they're trying to get you to assimilate. Mm-hmm. Hey, sister girl. Right? And it's like, but you get into the office and the debate and the switch, and it's like, yeah, I want you here. Yes, your Black body is needed, but like, can you do it this way? Can mm-hmm. you change everything that you are? Mm. Yeah, sister girl, change everything that you are. Mm. No, we still want you, though. But, you know, leave that for them people, because the other side is here. And that has been more of my experience at work than anything else. And so I think Diane reminds me of all of my, like, again, I'm not American, right? So, like, all of my Southern adopted aunties mm-hmm. that I met at, like, church or mm-hmm. I met at school, she reminds me of that very much. Like, it's loving and it's caring and it's safety, but I do need you to change everything that you are when you're here. Like, you can be all of that, but I'm going to keep you safe. Like, just change a little bit. No, just a little bit. Enough to be safe. So.
Yeah. And the therapist in me, the compassionate one that I am, looks at, because there was a lady that I used to work with, and she was the only in the top tier management. She was like the administrative assistant. And they would hang out. And I always wondered what her experience was to get up there and what her experience was up there. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, she did carry like this different air about her. And she had the one Black person that she kiki with. And, you know, but she was she carried herself a certain type of way. And I always wonder the trauma that she had to go through to get up to that position. It was in that position for years, and what she had to kind of like sidestep and deal with and continue to deal with, because I'm sure she's probably still there with all of those white people, upper management, that carry themselves like they're untouchable, you know, like I get that. And so I also understand the whole, listen, girl, I had to work hard to get up here, so you gonna have to work hard to get up here. Like, I can see that, because I can see how hard it was. But it's still like, but because you know how hard it was to get up there, wouldn't you want to make the landing a little softer for the rest of us? But it's the power, right? Like, when some Black women get power, I feel like they could be the worst people to work under.
Well, it's like, that idea that, like, you, in order to get ahead and stay ahead, that you have to assimilate, right, to the system. Mm-hmm. And so you have to act exactly how they act so that they respect you, so that they mm-hmm. treat you somewhere, so that you get to be untouchable too. And mm-hmm. it's oftentimes what we're told as women as well, right, where it's like, you got to act like a man in order to be a leader. When we look at the stats and what good leaders are, none of those traits are what we usually see in men. It's usually what mm-hmm. we don't associate them well in women, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's that similar idea when we have both of those identities coming together, where it's Black and a woman, and we know that we're battling with both of those things. Sometimes people will come up and they're like, yes, I know how hard it was for me. Let me give you a hand. Not because it's going to make this road a lot easier. You still have to do the work to get up. Yeah. You still have to do the work to climb the hill. I'm just literally giving you a rope or a hand or some traction. Mm-hmm. That way I know that you can do it, right? I'm going to support you in doing it. But some people, like you said, the trauma of it, they feel so hurt by what they have to do to get there that they feel like they have to assimilate. They have to look a certain way. They have to act a certain way. And they certainly cannot give special privileges to people that look like them coming behind them. They can't look a certain way of giving, you know, special treatment. So they stonewall themselves. They assimilate mm-hmm. just like the white folks do, because they feel like that's the best way for them to keep what they got.
Hey sis, if you are a high achieving, influential Black woman ready to lean into your peace and happiness so that you can live a satisfying life away from your to-do list, head over to closetfreakchronicles.com/pleasure and let's help you find the peace that you need in order to have the most satisfying life yet. Now back to the show.
Were y'all surprised?
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I don't want to say that. That's why I said earlier, because we know that, like, same thing with respectability politics, Black excellence, right? Especially when it's really worked, is like, I'm doing it to protect you. Yeah. And if you can't get one of the things, I'm gonna build this wall between you and it, because you're not gonna ruin it for me. Like, we did the work, we protected you, we laid the format and the foundation, and now you coming in here to be, oh, just all willy-nilly. No, you don't get to do that. Like, if I didn't get to do that, you don't get to do that. Mm-hmm. And it is related to, like, our history and our trauma of, like, being formerly enslaved, but because, you know, we're all trying to protect children and protect the men and all that stuff, but it's real, and it has real impact. Because you can't come over here being all Black be Black, because I'm not allowed to be Black be Black.
Right.
If I'm not allowed, you either can't be here at all, or you won't have to do it the way I want you to do. And that's just how it goes. That's why I said thank you earlier.
Mm-hmm. So there's a few other things that I wanted to pick your brain about. Did y'all have the sense that Diane was sleeping with, is his name Richard? Did y'all feel that? Like, did y'all know that was happening? I had absolutely no clue. I was like, oh, Diane. Like, I did not. Right? I had no clue.
I was like, hold on now. Hold on. Negative days, what? I did have one small sense when they first met, because as soon as he saw her, right, when she comes to the office, like, back mm-hmm. in the to meet Kendra Ray for lunch, and she has these bag sandwiches, right? Mm-hmm. And as soon as she stopped Richard turned around, he like, oh yeah, I'm gonna listen to whatever you got to say. So I saw then, it was a little, I thought it was just from him, you know, but mm-hmm. I was reciprocated. And so I'm really curious. Of course, the book is clearly brilliant, right? Like, we see the impact of the book over the course of time. But I'm really curious if he would have given her a second chance if he wasn't attracted to her, right? If he would have been mm-hmm. to have lunch with her and do this whole, you know, rigmarole, right, with her, if he wasn't attracted to her. Because you could see that little glimmer as soon as he turned around, like, oh, mm-hmm. lunch right now. I'm going to schedule around.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Like, did she get where she got with the book? because they were eventually messing around.
And Tanisha, I don't want to cut off your response to this question, but I'm also, I have questions about how this like deep childhood friendship got disrupted over just the book ending, right? And I get that like Kendra Ray is like very good at her job and very invested and she's this good editor, but it don't click to me fully that that's what that conflict was really about, that they gonna fall out completely over the ending of this woman's book and that like, you know, them not agreeing on which way to do it and how that looks like it still don't sit right with me. And having that complication of like her sleeping with Richard and kind of having his ear and being able to kind of manipulate the situation, to me, that speaks more to like what those dynamics look like and how it broke down. Mm-hmm. So that her sleeping with Diane sleeping with Richard, like to me is a big piece of, because it can't just be about a book ending. You see what I'm saying? No. That don't make sense. But if it's about you manipulating my career and you having my balls and you undermining me and you not respecting the work that I'm doing and what I'm putting out, that's different.
Mm-hmm. I think watching a TV series, it's the ending, it was surprising, but I think much like what you're saying, it really wasn't, because the moment that they shared, one, there's always going to be the white guys attracted to, like, the fine Black woman at work. Mm-hmm. And I think, energetically, I wasn't surprised, because that is also a narrative that's always given to us, too, is that, like, the successful Black girl kind of slept her way to the top, or you come to the successful Black woman, and then there's, like, a white man randomly there. Mm-hmm. And I would talk about it all the time for, like, you know, in pop culture, we talk about it all the time for, like, men. You know, Black men marry white women, blah, 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 blah. But I don't think we talk about it enough where, like, it's, oh, here's another Black woman who's successful, who has this book. Oh, and she's sleeping with the white guy. Okay, we got it. Yeah, we get it. You know, this happens. So it's not really that surprising, because I feel like any opportunity that, like, a white man has to, like, lord his power over Black women through his penis, he will. Yeah. As if they couldn't get, like, an opportunity to, like, stick with me without having to use power. But, yeah, like, in the context of, like, watching the show, I was like, oh, what? They're sleeping together. Got it. But, like, and, like, when you think about it, it's like, oh, no, they've been, because, like, TV does that on a regular basis. I know that this story is different, but TV does feed us the powerful Black woman, and her secret is a white man lover.
Yeah.
Or a white man husband.
Oh, yep, Olivia,
Annalise Keating. Yeah, I'll say scandal.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yep.
So it's very, like, up there. And it was some other show where, like, a woman president, she's Black and her husband was white. I feel like a Tyler Perry episode or something like that. It was, like, Scandal Reverse some shit. I don't know. But y'all get the point. Like, yeah. So we're fed that. And I think maybe that's the disappointment with the ending, with that part, with their relationship existing. It's like, okay, why couldn't she just be like some powerful Black guy and then be like a dominatrix of a white man? You know what I mean? Why it had to be like they were in a relationship? And I don't know. That's just my little,
Part of Diane sleeping with Richard, right, is access, because Richard is bankrolling this whole thing.
He's got the money.
He's got the money and the influence, right? The power. Nobody questions if he taps somebody and says, yeah, interview this person. Or no, you definitely need to see this resume, or you definitely need to hire this person. Because that's what you do. So he's bankrolling this whole situation. And because of his position in society, we see the ways in which she utilizes him kind of like a pawn for what she needs to happen. Like Richard is not really, yes, he holds the power in society, but Diane's got the like wink, wink, like, nah, I'm really the one.
Right.
All this stuff, right? I'm really the one in control here. And even like towards the end where like he's like, oh, you know, fawning over her and he wants to kiss her, and she's like, hold on,
we got shit to do first, don't even try to, we got problems, don't try to kiss on me.
So she uses the power. But I do think it's interesting that Nella also was dating a white man, and the ways in which kind of that white man played sidekick, if you will, right? It wasn't about this idea of the power he has in society. We didn't hear a whole bunch about Owen's story. We don't even know what he did at the school. Is he an administrator? Is he a teacher? We don't know. But we do know that we use him as a sidekick. Whenever we need Owen to come through, whether it's
come through,
whether it's your snacks.
I'm a best sidekick white man.
I do. Go handle it.
He showed
us. You know what I'm saying? I love someone that I don't have to give you anything of me to, like, you just there, you know what I'm saying? And then when you gotta use your little white man, you know, I was thinking about this other day. Actually, I was thinking about this yesterday. I was with this show. So I was thinking about this old coworker I had, who, while everyone else was being problematic, was an older white guy, and he was just the truth. Like, anytime he saw me, he was like, "Hey, Sneisha, I got your back." And I'm like, "Yes, you do, Jason. Yes, you do. You do got my back." You know what I mean? And he was like a stoner, and I was like, "Yes, I love you, older white man. Thank you for having my back." And everybody else would be like, "Manipulation, manipulation." He'd just be like, "Sneisha, I'm so proud of you. I'm happy to exist in your world." Yes, you are, Owen. Yes, you are. Happy to exist in my world. Yeah. In the background. Yeah. No, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that, but that also reminds me of the, again, I would say to my episode, I didn't even take the time to get to know her name, the ditzy little white girl. She showed up.
Sophie.
Yeah, she showed up when it was time. Like, she sure did. She was so annoying and very random when she would pop up. But she did. She was like, "I got you. Take my badge. We're friends."
What do you need from me? Anything. I like Sophie. Again, right. More annoying. Small doses. But yeah, I like Sophie. Mm-hmm. You know, what can you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
come on, small doses.
So how did you all feel about the hair grease being the manipulator? I just feel like the hair grease and how that is what kind of bonded the relationship between Diane and Kendra, right, is like her doing like the whole throwing the hair thing, the hair party and all of that. I was like, oh, so this is how we feel about our hair. This is how we're gonna get manipulated. Like, that's the way to do it though.
It is. It was very what's that movie? I can't remember right now. But I don't know why when you talked about the hair grease, when you asked that question, Rashida Jones popped in my head. Mm. I kind of just said like a small, because you know she like helped with the show, whatever.
One, yeah, she's a producer, I think. Yeah.
And like, I love that it was her. I'm thinking about her hair. I'm thinking about how she looks in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, she's a black woman that people don't realize is black, and so I just think that it was like really like. I don't know. I feel like it means something that she was one of the producers of the show, and her hair is so straight, and her reputation as a black woman. No, because she's like, you know, she's black and she's white, and she's a really famous daughter. But like, she looks like a white woman or a mixed race woman, and here she is supporting the show. And then like, I don't know. But the hair grease, it's very like, it's giving orange soda, grape drink. You know what I mean? Like, it's the thing. Because what was that other show? Bad Hair. It was like, oh my God, we're doing this again. But it makes sense because when we are taught to conform as black women, it is through our hair. That's usually like the first place that we start. That even if you don't cold switch, if you, hey girl, if you have a perm or if you have a wig, you know what I mean? That's the easiest way for people to like be able to digest you and process you and receive you. So I feel like it's just like, I don't think black women like overly care about our hair. I think our hair through society and time has always been the gateway though. Battle CJ Walkers of the world and the pomades and the head wraps, like, you know what I mean? So, like, but that was spooky.
But I really like, I felt like the hair aspect of it, because it was the grease and it was also like the transformation after you start, right? And what the hair looked like then. Like, even when they converted Jesse Watson, he cut off his beard, right?
Yes.
There's a certain aesthetic they're looking for when they conform, right? When they turn, if you will. But the idea of, like, using grease specifically, not just, like, any sort of hair thing, but grease, that felt really grounded in Blackness to me.
Yeah.
Because there's so many of us that have those, like, deep-seated memories of sitting between somebody's legs and to have a hair party where it's like, yes, we're going to specifically do that, right? We'll have the ice cream and the treats and, you know, all of that, and we'll kiki, but really it's about that, right? And of course there's, again, a sinister but this idea of like, we are going to sit down and grease your scalp, we're going to get back to the basics, that felt so grounded to me in the culture, right? And it's so easy too to like get somebody with that.
It really is. But then you think about that moment at the party where Malika was like, girl, we don't, I work really hard on your hair. And then you get to a place where you find someone and you have like those old wives' tales of not letting everyone touch your hair because mm-hmm. of the intention that they're putting on you. So mm-hmm. being able to throw that mm-hmm. in there and her saying, oh, wait a minute. No, I'm good. Yeah. I got someone to touch my hair because I yeah. don't really know what you got. Because
it's a trust thing, right? It's like, right. I have to trust you. It's almost a position of like, yes, friendship, yes, bonding, but also deep trust for me. Mm-hmm. Like between your legs, let you like get all up in my hair. It's this intimate moment, right? Mm-hmm. Of like black female bonding that we know very intimately. So like for them to use that callback, I'm like, okay, I see y'all. Yeah. For y'all to spin that and make that the horror, right? The racism wasn't the horror. Our culture, we use that to spin it and make it the horror. And I was like, that's kind of masterful, mm-hmm. you know?
I mean, because getting your scalp greased by another Black woman is an act of love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. An act of attention. It's mm-hmm. a whole spell. Like, you know, think about your mom or your cousins. Like, you're my favorite cousin. I love when she greased my scalp when I was little. Like, she could get me to do anything if she did that for me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not kidding. She could. And I think that speaks to how, yeah, I think that's how, this speaks to how Nella made her elevation, if you will, or her transition, right? Because, like, again, my cousin could get me to do anything. She wanted me to go around the block. She wanted me to go wash dishes for her. Mm-hmm. If you grease my scalp, yes, I will. Because that at least tells me that you love me. It tells me that you care for me. Yeah. And I think her, you know, assimilating eventually, it kind of speaks to that same thing that we're talking about, the safety, the trust, the mm-hmm. care. Because on some level, these women cared enough to pick me, right? Like, yeah, y'all was like, you were going through to like brainwash me, but you cared enough for it to be me that you saw to be successful. Mm-hmm. And that's the spooky part, is that yeah. like, as much as like slavery is over and segregation and shit is over, it still affects us in these types of ways that we don't really know or notice until you notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do y'all feel like Nella did use the grease at the end?
Oh no, definitely not.
Okay. Yeah, because I was like, when she pulled out that flip phone, I said, oh, that's a burner.
So have you ever heard of the movie, it's a book too, called The Spook That Sat by the Door?
No.
Okay, listen, you gotta look it up. And literally I went to a predominantly white college in the middle of Iowa, literally. And I had a Black professor, and I went to her probably to talk about life in the middle of the cornfields. Mm-hmm. And please just give me some tips and tricks. And she put me on. She was like, I need you to watch this. Because in this dynamic, I saw a lot through this movie of, are you working from within to change the system, or are you doing it from outside the system, right? Nella, for the whole beginning, that was her struggle, right? Because she mm-hmm. really wanted to do it from within, and she struggled with that. Mm-hmm. And you get Jesse Watson, who is like, you got to get out, and you got to do it from the outside, mm-hmm. right? And for me, I think there's a place for both. It really depends on the person. But The Spook Who Sat by the Door is about this dude of like 1973, they made this book. And it's also a movie. I watched the movie, I didn't read the book. And both were banned for a very long time and hard to access. They're easier now, you can get it off Amazon. And it's kind of satirical, and it's kind of like this handbook, right? For like revolution and like how we move forward. But anyway, the main character is trained by the CIA, like full on trained by the CIA as a CIA agent. But in this process, he's like, what is this? Like, I'm not winning. So he leaves. He leaves the CIA. He goes and starts training freedom fighters, literal freedom fighters in Chicago. And this whole idea is about like, it is simplistic because the movie is a lot in the same way that like this show is a lot, and you can really break it down. But in simplistic terms, the idea is that like, let's use the white man's tools against them, right? And so it's about taking the system and the knowledge of the system and literally turning that on its head against the oppressor and using that information against them. And so I felt that that was what they were kind of moving towards, mm-hmm. the end, right? Where it's like, mm-hmm. we got enough info. And the best way for us to do this is from within and not without.
Right.
But right. we're going to do it using their tools, using mm-hmm. what they think is best. And we're going to turn that on its head.
Yeah.
So it gave me a Black, because this was a Black man who was the star of mm-hmm. this movie sat by the door. And like, literally, like, I was like feeling a little hint of it, but by the end I was like, this is definitely a Black woman's version of A Spook Who Sat by the Door. And how do we change the system in a corporate way?
Yeah. That's a hard concept when you're going through the things that you're going through. Cause that's something my dad would always say. He was like, listen, you take all the information, you get all the information you can, mm-hmm. and you use it how you're going to use it. And it makes me think about, like, y'all could probably attest this being a business owner and seeing that there are a lot of white business owners out here that have all these courses and they have all these mm-hmm. programs and they have all mm-hmm. these things. And then you get in there and you're listening to the information and you're like, why am I here? Like, what are y'all in here doing? But then, you know, once you realize this isn't bad information that you're giving, you're just not using it the right way, or you're using it for someone that doesn't look like me. Like, this is not for me, but mm-hmm. I'm going to take all this information, keep giving me the goods, and I'm going to take it and I'm going to use it how I can in my business with people that do look like me. But when I first started business, I was like, oh my God, what is it? I hate it here. What is this? I can't, yeah. I don't understand the game and I don't want to play, because it's exhausting, right? Absolutely. Like, to watch this series and see her ripping and running and have to go through the journey that she had to go through to recognize, I have to change how I fight this fight, because the way I'm fighting it is not working. But it's exhausting to even have to fight a fight in the first place.
Absolutely.
Like, I didn't even consider that she could have been infiltrating, but that makes a lot more sense. That, like, through the act of, like, you know, being loved on, because again, right, we're going back to, like, the hair. If you're loving me enough to pick me, to choose me, to protect me, to keep me safe, then I can love you back by eradicating this whole system. Mm. And I have also done that in my career, where, like, I remember my last company, my last job that I worked for, I was a manager, and I made sure that I hired people in my parents' home countries, right? Because as a Black mm-hmm. woman, I was like, this is where I fix all of this. This is mm-hmm. where I change the narrative, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is where my power lies. And every person that I interviewed, and some of them I'm still friends with now, they all were like, oh my God, you're young, you're Black, and you're hiring me. And I'm like, yeah, because this is how we fuck shit up. You know what I mean? This is how we change the game. Because, yeah, we could hire people from the Philippines, but I'm a Black woman. I owe it to my people and love and care to hire where I also know that you're struggling. Mm-hmm. That, and like, using the information when you said that, I was like, yeah, because that's how I feel about human design. That's how I feel about anti tapping. That's how I feel about the tools that I use with my clients who happen to more times than not be BIPOC women, most of the time Black women. It's a good even mix of, like, marginalized people. But anyway, because, like, you can take these things and you got to use it for the benefit of all. Mm-hmm. So you got to, like, soak up all the information and then help everyone eradicate themselves from, like, the shit that they're living in. But when you said that, I was like, yeah, human design, because people make that shit seem, like, super woo. And it is, but it isn't. And mm-hmm. it's practical without being, like, and it's gatekept a lot, too.
Yeah.
So I don't know. My brain brought me there for in regards to my company and my business and the work that I do. So, yeah.
Yeah. And Asasha, I love that you brought up entrepreneurship, because there's that moment when Kendra Ray says something about, like, don't you want to never compromise and wake up?
Yeah, be free.
And that immediately, to me, was about entrepreneurship, right? Mm-hmm. And honestly, so many Black women have said the same thing, right? When we look at the numbers, even 2019, Black mm-hmm. women were leading over any other group, including white men, in starting businesses, because we are trying to find that freedom. Mm-hmm. We are trying to find that way of, like, not compromising ourselves, showing up as our full selves. And if the system ain't giving it to us, then we're creating it.
Yeah.
And then another way we do it is to just quiet quit. We're not working to live. We're working to live, and we're not living to work. We're mm-hmm. not giving ourselves to our office. We're like, you know what? I'm gonna give you what I need to give you. Run me my salary.
Yep.
I'm gonna go home to my family, my children, my friends, my brunches, whatever I need to do, because this is not it. This is not my life. And so I really love that idea of, like, thinking about entrepreneurship in those terms, because I think a lot of Black women have come to that same conclusion around, this is my freedom. me creating the systems that I want to see, me creating the business that I want to be in. And Tanisha, when you spoke about like, let me hire the people that look like me, let me make sure that I'm providing a path, whether it was when you were in corporate or when you were in entrepreneurship, that is that idea of not compromise, of working the system from within and then showing up free.
Yeah. And kind of like, as we kind of wrap this up, you saying that makes me think about when I was at the last corporate and all of my managers had quit and they came to me before they quit and asked me to step up and run the department. And they were like, you're the only one that we trust. I was like, okay. So I did it. And then they hired, I didn't want the director job. That is not, it was too much. I didn't want it. But they hired somebody to do it. And it just so happened that in a meeting one day, they were talking about me. I had gotten the assistant role and they were talking about how I didn't show up how I used to when I was in that role and that I only did my 8 hours and then I went home. And someone came and told me, and it was a bad day. So I went to my director and I was like, so y'all was talking about me. And she ended up, the person who told me ended up getting fired because she did share that information with me. I felt so bad. I felt so bad about it. And I apologized profusely. She was like, girl, they crazy. It's fine. You better hurry up and get out of there. But to me, I was thinking, I did what I did because of the position that I was in, right? Mm-hmm. When you made the decision to hire someone else, that's no longer my job.
Period.
Like the things that you're requesting of me, I'm not the director anymore. I assist her, and that all I need is 8 hours to do that, and then I can go home.
And that's all y'all pay me for. I don't understand why y'all expect me to go above and beyond when y'all not going above and beyond with these benefits. Y'all not going above and beyond with this salary,
right?
I'm going above and beyond with even how y'all treat me, the culture. So right. How is it that y'all expecting something from me that y'all won't provide y'all selves?
Right, right. And it made me think about Nella and the book and her asking her to, I need you to go out of your way to not do this with this book. Like, do not give this information about this book. This is how we're going to define your job. This is how I'm going to tell you what to do with this job, even though you get paid to do one thing. Like, what?
Like, but how, then when they were in crisis, they were like, oh, Nella, help us. Nella, what are your ideas? Nella, save us. Oh, now you want me to go outside of my job description. Which one is it?
Right, right. And that's how I felt. Like, you wanted me to go above and beyond to help y'all when you had nobody, but you want me to keep that same energy when it's not my responsibility anymore.
Make it make sense.
Call being the magical Black woman. Haven't you heard of it? You have way more energy.
Horrible.
You have way more battery in your back than the average white man.
No, and it was a white woman that they gave, and I absolutely adored my director. I didn't want the position again, but like, you think about most of the women that I know, and you could probably agree, we are high achievers. Mm-hmm. Like, when we put our name on something, I'm gonna make sure I do well. Like, when I do my job, I do my job well. I may have an attitude about something, but you're gonna get a good result. And then you take that and you take advantage of me because I am a good worker, because everyone else is half-assing or they're trash. And so then you're always running to me because I'm so good and I'm so well. Like, no, you go ask someone else to do it.
And that's how the job system is completely broken. If the reward for doing good work is just
more work.
It's just more work. Not a promotion, not more money, not even recognition, really. Like, you might get a half like, oh, you're so valuable to us. Put that in action though. What that look like?
That looks like
pizza.
Girl, I was just saying, you know, that's some pizza. Now, you know, I can't count on my fingers how many times we have pizza to recognize us for the work that we do.
And then what a slap in the face when we do see people who are doing half of that amount of work.
Getting promoted. Be a chili cook-off. I'm sorry, y'all. If you do really, really good work, it's a chili cook-off. It's some brownies in the break room. There might even be some coffee burning. It might be Starbucks. That's enough. You want too much.
Yeah, like asking for too much. Yeah. So I appreciate this conversation. I appreciate being able to hear other people's reviews of this again. I hope because right now Jesse was tased and is in a car. So there's a lot more.
Do we know if they have a season two, like if it's been greenlit?
I have no clue. I don't know, but I need them to come on with the come on so I can see how this is infiltrated and how this is going to move forward and how I could keep taking notes from it. Because like the information needs to be spread. And I appreciate you both, Bea and Tanisha, for coming on and chit-chatting with me. Do you have any last words? Like for someone that has not watched this yet and it is on their list, what do you want, even though we spoiled the whole shit for you, what do you want them to go in as far as their mindset is? Because it's a lot of twists and turns.
I think being a magical Black woman can look more than one way, and don't be afraid of the mystery. That's what I got for you.
Yeah. I like that.
Well, I was going to say, there was this one quote that Nella says, it is towards the end, so sorry, spoiler alert. But she says, but the pain is part of what makes us who we are. Mm. And that theme kind of runs throughout, this idea of we have to hold on to that pain in the workplace, in our identities as Black women, because that makes us who we are. And the show really grapples with this, because the response from Diana is, don't you see how miserable that sounds? And I think we are always struggling with this idea of using the pain to define us or trying to get rid of it. And that's, I think, what makes this show really magical and really speaks to our experience, because that's real.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Owning Pleasure as a Black Woman. And I hope today's conversation has inspired you to embrace pleasure in all aspects of your life. Remember, your voice matters in this journey. Share your thoughts and experiences by leaving a review and stay connected with our community by joining our email list. The link is in the show notes. Together, we're redefining what it means to savor life and celebrate the joy in just being you. Until next time, keep prioritizing your pleasure because you are deserving. Take care and stay tuned for more empowering discussions. Bye.